Peter B. Collins, News and Commentary, Wednesday, February 1st. We're dancing around the studio today in honor of the passing of Don Cornelius. He was the host of television's Soul Train. He was on the air for about 45 years. He was kind of the African-American Dick Clark. And he passed away at the age of 75 yesterday. And the news today leads with a story attributed to Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, who we were hammering on Monday for his appearance on 60 Minutes on Sunday evening, where he laughed when he was asked how many hot wars the United States is currently involved in. And despite the perch he had on 60 Minutes, he waited until today to announce that the United States and NATO will be seeking an end to their role in combat in Afghanistan in 2013. Now, let's listen carefully to the quote here. "Hopefully, by mid to the latter part of 2013, we'll be able to make a transition from a combat role to a training, advice, and assist role," he told reporters traveling with him to Brussels, where he is attending NATO meetings this week. "It's still a pretty robust role that we'll be engaged in. It's not going to be a kind of formal combat role that we are now. That doesn't mean that we're not going to be combat ready. We will be, because we always have to be in order to defend ourselves." And in a separate quote from the same conversation, "We are committed to an enduring presence there." Now, this reminds me of the comments that Henry Kissinger made on the eve of the 1972 presidential election. Regarding the Vietnam War and the peace talks in Paris, he said, "Peace is at hand." It was a lie, a calculated statement for political purposes, and it did help win the re-election of Richard Nixon over his peacenik challenger, George McGovern. And I take this as a Kissinger-type statement. Because to say that we're winding down our combat role and it will end sometime next year, in the mid to latter part of 2013. Well, that's what they call in financial circles a forward-looking statement that cannot be relied upon. And to say that we won't have a combat role but we'll still have a robust presence and we're committed to an enduring presence, I think that's the real story. And whether we call them combat troops or not, American soldiers will be in Afghanistan for many years to come. And this is a maneuver to try to get the president through this re-election year. And who knows what'll happen, assuming Obama is re-elected in November. We really can't rely on him to bring this war to an end. And the idea that the Afghans are ready to take over is a really sick joke. Hamid Karzai, our puppet and an illegitimate leader by any measure in Afghanistan, will not be able to hold on without U.S. combat forces. That's what's propping up this puppet. And there's other news today that the Taliban has been meeting in Qatar with representatives of the United States, and there is some talk of releasing a handful of Taliban prisoners who are held at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. We have another story about Guantanamo in a bit. I'd like to see a lot of people released from Guantanamo, all except the true suspects who should be transferred to the United States and either charged and tried or released. And if they're going to use Guantanamo prisoners as chips in some sort of negotiations with the Taliban, I predict the Taliban will take the chips and then walk away from the table. Here in the United States, Planned Parenthood is under assault. It's been going on for more than a year. The latest salvo coming from the Susan G. Komen Foundation. They're focused on breast cancer, and they've partnered with Planned Parenthood for breast cancer treatment, for screenings, and for self-examinations for women. And the Komen Foundation has announced it's cutting off $700,000 in annual grant money to Planned Parenthood. This is part of a larger effort to try to connect Planned Parenthood exclusively to abortion services, which account for 2% of the work that Planned Parenthood does. And the way they're being demonized by the right wing is truly ugly. And there's been a tremendous pushback today. My Facebook page is full of people who are fulminating against the Komen Foundation. Many who have donated to Komen in the past are not going to do so in the future. They're going to give their dollars to Planned Parenthood. Here's a comment from Heather Estes, who is CEO of Planned Parenthood Shasta Pacific. And you can hear the full conversation in the latest podcast released today at peterbcollins.com. The news today is that Planned Parenthood has been receiving about $700,000 a year in grants from the Komen Foundation, whose focus is on breast cancer. And you have collaborated in many different ways with the funding that was received from the Komen Foundation. And they've made what I see as a very political decision to cut off this funding stream to Planned Parenthood. What is your comment on it?
Breast cancer screening and preventive education is so important, and it's deeply disappointing to us that the Komen Foundation, who we consider a friend and partner in the fight against breast cancer, has decided to stop funding breast cancer prevention and screening at Planned Parenthood health centers. And who gets hurt? Women. Well, there's no question that women's health, and of course women's reproductive health, but women's health in specific is currently being used as a political football in a number of different arenas now. I think I sort of think of ourselves as the poster children by the Tea Party, and this is just one of the areas in which I think women's health care has been politicized to the unfortunate impact for low-income women in specific and those who are uninsured.
The official results from Florida are in, and Mitt Romney handily beat Newt Gingrich. Rick Santorum with about 13%, and Ron Paul bringing up the rear with about 7% of the vote. But Florida, of course, is the scene of the crime for the stolen election in 2000, with hanging chads and the incomplete recount that was stopped by the U.S. Supreme Court to ensure that George W. Bush would win Florida and the presidency. Well, the shenanigans continue because some of my election protection sources took a look at the servers that were delivering the information about the vote count in Florida in the Republican primary. And if you recall, back in 2004 in Ohio, the Secretary of State's servers were transferred to private control on election night. In my view, that's how they stole the election. They manipulated the computer results. And here, the hackers, bloggers, and election protection activists have discovered that Microsoft Corporation provided the servers that delivered the results in the Florida vote count in this year's primary. And I'm looking at a screen right now that shows that most of the servers are controlled by the Florida Department of State, but a number of them are controlled by Quality Technology Services, LLC, which I'm told is owned by Microsoft. And if you trust Microsoft to count the votes, you're probably okay with that. I think the vote should be counted on paper ballots in the precincts, and that we should not be using these machines either to capture the original vote or to tabulate them. And, of course, I don't always win those calls for transparency and honesty in our elections. As you also may know, exit polls have been one way that we challenge manipulated vote counts that are released to the public. And, again, when you look at Ohio in 2004, Florida in 2000, the exit polls told the truth, and the manipulated count did not. Well, CBS Television did conduct an exit poll in Florida, but they're not clear on the concept because they did it on Monday and the election was on Tuesday. I'm not sure where the people were exiting that they polled, but that is an embarrassing development for CBS. And, of course, the networks have been part of the problem by either suppressing exit polls or scrubbing them to match the official vote count very quickly after the fact. So they'll use exit polls to make their projections on election night, but they quickly remove them from public view to prevent people like us from seeking the truth. I mentioned Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the talk that the Obama administration may trade some prisoners to the Taliban. And I want to commend Jeffrey Kay. He is a psychologist who moonlights as a writer at truthout.org. And he reveals that one particular detainee at Guantanamo named Abdul Aziz Naji, who's an Algerian citizen, was, over his objections, sent home from Guantanamo and forcibly returned to Algeria in 2010. The very first Gitmo detainee removed to a country where he refused to go because he was afraid that he would be held there under a statute that allows for the detention of terror suspects for up to 12 days. Instead, he was sent to court, and the judge spurned the testimony presented that suggested his innocence, convicted him, and sentenced him to 3 additional years in jail. Prosecutors had asked for a 10-year sentence. And this is just another example of how the good intentions of President Obama when he announced his plan to close Guantanamo have gone sideways and been corrupted. And now he fails to act even in a way to preserve the rights of an individual who believed he would be badly treated if sent to his home nation. A quick note about Keith Olbermann, who's been missing from his current TV perch. He was not on to cover the Florida primary results. And from a separate source, one of my trade sources, it's been suggested that Keith is off now because he has bronchitis. Well, I hope you come back soon, Keith, and I don't want to see you get into another battle with network owners, even Al Gore and Joel Hyatt. Also, congratulations to Sean Penn, who has been named a roving ambassador for the nation of Haiti. And that is respect for the work that he has done since the earthquake in Haiti 2 years ago. The birthers are back. Oh, I'm sorry to report this, but there is so much activity on the web, and frankly, I haven't seen it bubble up into the mainstream and corporate media, and I'm not sure exactly why, particularly over at Fox News, where they love to exploit these things. But based on these internet accounts, and I'm now looking at a website called thenationalpatriot.com, there was a hearing last week. Looks like it was on Friday. And it was in the state of Georgia. I'm reading through this right now. And it's a court case that has been brought over the issue of whether or not the president is a natural-born American. And the issue that they're raising now, and yes, Orly Tates is one of the people driving this case, is whether or not Obama's father was an American. And it doesn't appear that he was. He was from Kenya. He lived in Hawaii. He fathered Barack Obama with Stanley Ann Dunham, Obama's mother. And I don't believe that it is required for both parents to be citizens. I think you simply need to be born in the United States to be a natural-born citizen. Now, the argument presented here on this website contradicts that. It says the point is, to be a natural-born citizen, one must have two parents who, at the time of the birth in question, be citizens of the United States. Now, that's not grammatically correct, but, you know, that's the assertion here. And it goes on, as Obama's father was not a citizen, the argument is that Obama constitutionally is ineligible to serve as president. And as you know, I think this is a ridiculous issue. It's based on racism. An attempt to make Barack Obama seem like the other. And I accept the fundamentals. He has a birth certificate that says he was born in Hawaii. Hawaii was part of the United States at that time. He's a natural-born citizen. Case closed. But expect this to be regurgitated as Donald Trump circles to re-enter the fray as an independent candidate. And it seems like that is more and more likely all the time. Two items from here in California before I wrap up. We're broke, and we are shy $3.3 billion to get to April 15th when people's tax payments will be rolling in. And it's comprised of equal parts, $2.6 billion where the budget was out of whack. In other words, we've spent $2.6 billion more than the budget called for, and the projected tax revenues came in exactly $2.6 billion short. So when you do the math, that is $5.2 billion of a budget gap, but the actual cash needed to get through the next couple of months is $3.3 billion. Brother, can you spare a dime or a billion or three? If so, call Jerry Brown in Sacramento. And finally, we're changing the rules for elections here in California, and we have what's now called the top two primary. It's an open primary where members of either party can compete, and voters can select a candidate from a party other than the one they are registered to if they want to. One of the other rules that was part of the ballot measure that brought us this new open primary bans write-in votes. And the state legislature is reviewing this situation, and there are some of our elected officials who want to reinstate the write-in and others who want to leave it the way it is. And on January 10th, the California Senate Elections Committee unanimously passed a bill which includes no write-in votes. Now, I happen to think that this is an important safety valve in what's left of our democracy. And there are times when I have availed myself of the write-in vote because I simply could not bring myself to vote for the candidates listed on my ballot. And we came close to a write-in candidate winning when Tom Amiano ran for mayor of San Francisco against Willie Brown in the late 1990s. So I think this is undemocratic, short-sighted, and frankly, I'm against it. Thanks for joining me for today's news and comment. Visit my website for the latest podcast, which includes the story about Planned Parenthood and an interview with Rich Forer, an American Jew who is not a Zionist. Check it out at peterbcollins.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.